Jai Ma. So we are entering the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavat Puran, and we will read, we'll basically speak about the story of the two incarnations of Lord Vishnu, or the Supreme Being as the Purana puts it. And one of them is Parshuram ji, Bhagwan Parshuram, and the other is Lord Ram. But in the story, in the narrative, in Bhagavat Puran, first Shri Ram is mentioned, then Parshuram. But we'll go with the original sequence, as Parshuram being the seventh avatar and sixth avatar, and Lord Ram being the seventh. And there is a reason for this sequence. And we see that before Shri Parshuram, we don't know whether the scene is earth or somewhere else. The whole story, even up till King Bali and Vaman. So first time we see at least a human form, but we don't know really that the story is taking place on earth or somewhere else. But with Lord Parshuram, first time, we are very clear the story is taking place on earth, and all the avatars henceforth will be beings who are descending on earth. So this is one great transition. Second transition, which is very interesting, is it is only from Lord Parshuram and then subsequently with Lord Ram and Shri Krishna. It is also the transformation taking place in nature. Actually, it is very subtly indicated, because they are coming with their powers, Shakti, or in some way the feminine power is involved. Till Vaman Avatar, we don't see the feminine power. First time we see the feminine power in Parshuram, Bhagwan Parshuram story. And this story starts with, there are four main characters. One is, of course, Parshuram himself. And there is in the background Kartha Virya Arjun, or Sahasra Arjun also, as he is called. And there is, of course, the parents of Parshuram, which is Jamdagni Rishi and Renuka Devi. Now, Renuka Devi is very, very interesting character. There is a street in Pondicherry which is named after her. I don't know if anybody can guess or not, but I'll come to that a little later. The name is Mariamman Coil Street. Mariamman Coil Street. So Mariamman is connected with Renuka Devi. There is a festival also, Yellamma Temple, and you will see in Among the Fallen. It's a very fascinating story of his birth itself. But it all starts with Kartha Virya Arjun, who is also known as Sahasra Arjun. He is actually a very, not only a devoted being, just like Ravan. His story is very much like Ravan. So this also we'll see. Parallel to the divine incarnation, there is the conversion of the Asura, which goes on in its own way in this story. Though with Ravan's story, you connect it to Jai Vijay. So there is Sahasra Arjun, who is extremely, he is kingdom. It's difficult to pronounce. And he is, has conquered Karkotaka, and, you'll find some other place. Some people say probably Madhya Pradesh, some would say Andhra. And he is an extremely powerful and pious king. Pious se jada, he is a tapasvi. And he has done, he is supposed to be the incarnation of the Sudarshan Chakra, the discus of Lord Vishnu. And as he comes, obviously he conquers many kings, but slowly, which is again a word of caution, just like Ravan, that the higher you rise, the humbler you should become. And the sign of somebody who is truly great is that he is very, very humble. Now, if pride is overtaking you, as we know in the story of Napoleon in the Western world, as we know in the story of Ravan, then it is so dangerous, because it opens the door to your fall, nemesis. So here he is very powerful, and there are thrice he subjugates Ravan of Lanka. In fact, he goes there and literally almost on the verge of, he forgives him, otherwise he would have died. So there are three incidences where Ravan comes and takes, fights with him, and he subjugates him. Even when Ravan is adolescent, or rather young, then when Ravan grows older, so Ravan is also present in this whole story, but he is subjugated by Sahasra Arjun or Kartavir Arjun. There are different names. So Sahasra Arjun, normally he is described as someone with 1,000 arms. Now 1,000 arms, 100 arms, 10 heads are very figurative. It was a way of saying that he had the strength of 1,000 arms. He is supposed to have stopped the flow of waters just by stretching his arms. So he had that kind of power in him to stop the flow, that kind of beings, very much vitally very strong. And that was the age when you'll be largely see the vital, all Sugriv's kingdom, Vali, all of them are basically, Kshatriyas are predominating the world, and they are becoming more and more arrogant. So Sahasra Arjun is one such being, very nice, very, very wonderful king in the beginning. But slowly, ego takes the better of him, and he feels he can do anything, he is very arrogant. So one day he lands up in the ashram of Rishi Jamdagni. Now Jamdagni is a rishi who is on a great trail of tapasya with his wife Renuka, and both of them are tapasvis. And just like the story of Bharadwaj and other Gautam Rishi, it was a tapasya of an extreme kind. The tapasya involved that even in your mind you should be completely chaste. There should be no thought, no feelings, no impulses of any kind. So now this is extremely difficult. It's not physical chastity. Physical chastity is relatively easier. But to be chaste in the mind is something which Nalinda says once passingly, that if you talk about mental chastity, there would be hardly anyone in the world. Because it's requires a great degree. But well, they were trying it, they were engaged in that process, and obviously it meant something very great. So they are both trying mental chastity and everything else. This was only one aspect. And as the story goes, that when Renuka Devi goes to one of the rivers, she sees a celestial being, a Gandharva. And in her mind, she has the thought of probably having some kind of relationship with him. Now I'll come to why these stories are interesting and important. At least for me, I can share it. So then she comes back and she had accumulated a lot of power. So she used to carry a pitcher, and even a kacha means it's not yet given the fire, but she had so much fire within her that even the clay pot, which is not really set to fire, would become like a pakka ripe pitcher, and she could bring water. She didn't need to wait for that. She could pick up clay, just put it, that kind of tapasya she had done. So that day, because her mind deviated, she gets late and the pitcher develops holes. And when she comes, Rishi Jamdagni knows it. What does he do? Now, if you go with a crude story, it will look very strange. But it's a very profound story. So what does he do? He has four sons. And he calls his sons and says, look, your mother has done this. Punish her by behead her. Now, all the three sons refuse. Parshuramji is the youngest. He is the incarnation of Lord Vishnu. He immediately beheads her. And all the other three sons. So then he's very pleased, Rishi Jamdagni, and says, ask me whatever you want to ask. He says, please revive them. Because he knew his father has great powers and he can, mystical powers he could revive. So he revives them. Now herein lies one of the many stories in ancient scriptures where is death and revival. And if we understand its psychology, it fits into yoga. anybody who has gone through the path of yoga will understand instantly what is being spoken of. You die to the old self and you recover a new self. It's like things go to an extreme. There is a fall and then there is a rise, which is something new, unprecedented. So, because it's there in the story, not just my, you know, interpretation. So what happens is when she is revived, so Jamdagni, by his power, makes sure that they forget the three other sons and she forgets all the past, whatever has happened. Now this is literally making your fall a means to greater rise. And when she comes back in her fullness, because she is herself an avatar of, it is said, of Goddess Parvati. So she goes through death, she goes through rebirth, but this is a unique rebirth where she forgets that entire past. And now she has developed a new capacity or a new work which awaits her. And what is the new work? Because she experienced the fall. It's very interesting. She has experienced the fall. And a goddess, there is a line in Savitri, a god come down and greater by the fall. A very mystical line. People often wonder what is meant by it. So she has experienced what it means to fall. She has experienced what it means to come back. She becomes the celebrated goddess of many people in Karnataka, Maharashtra, Andhra and Telangana. Guess who's of all the women who have fallen? So you will see she is known there as Yallama, and you will see she is brought up by one lady called Matangi. There are several myths associated, legends, and each of them is very fascinating. One legend which is fascinating, which is not there in Bhagavad Puran, but very fascinating, is that when Parshuram says, please revive her, so there is a lady called Matangi who also prays. So she's also dead, and what he does is there is a transplantation of heads. But the transplantation takes place on the wrong head. So Yallama basically is Renuka's head and Matangi's body, and the other is Matangi's head and Renuka's body. So it's again describes a condition of yoga where you can be helpful, extremely become God's instrument, where a part of you has completely become developed, spiritualized, and there are other parts which are, I'm using the word spiritualized loosely, not in the way Sri Aurobindo speaks about it, whereas there are other parts which are not yet changed. And then she goes, mixes, and she revives them even till today. So all the devadasis, the fallen women, the transgenders, so all those who say no, transgenders had no place in Indian society, they're fools. Transgenders worship Yallama Devi, which is an incarnation of Goddess Parvati. It's an amazing story, and I mean, if you visit one of the temples, it's quite celebrated. So this is the story of Renuka Devi, very much revered, and she reaches this status because she experienced the fall and then came out. And this forgetting the entire past is not just memory. It the traces, everything has been cleansed. It's like a rebirth where the entire past is gone completely. Now she is ready for assuming the role. So this is the story of Renuka, goddess Renuka. And then we have what happens to subsequently to Bhagwan Parshuram. So she is brought back into existence. He is doing his penance. He goes time to time. While Renuka's before that. So he is carrying on his life. Then Sahasra Arjun and his army now comes to Rishi Jamdagni's ashram. And they need some food. They are hungry. So again we see, just like Vasishtha's story. So he has Kamadhenu. So Kamadhenu is there in his ashram. She could provide food to so many. Just like in our ashram. Literally, you know, and there are stories related to that, how this Kamadhenu is here. You know, why I say so? Look, On an average day, the ashram dining room provides food to some 1,000, maybe 1,200 official ashramite. You add some more. On exceptional days, when there are many visitors, on a darshan day, sometimes the number swells to several thousands. But food is provided. And there are stories about it, but I am not going into it. Very interesting story about the granary. So Kamadhenu is not just, there is a cow which keeps giving, cow of plenty. But her presence of this being provides a possibility that you can feed any number of people. And this is there in some other ashrams, I know that this is a power. If you hold that power, you can provide to whatever is required for sustenance for many people. So Kamadhenu provides. So now when Sahasra Arjuna has become little arrogant, quite arrogant. So he says, well, I need her for my kingdom. You have that power, Kamadhenu, I need her for my kingdom. And he says, no, it cannot be like that. You have to earn, deserve. She is the result of tapasya. She can't be provided, sometimes people ask, this question, that God has all the power, there are saints and yogis who have power, why don't they solve the problem of everybody? Why don't they make sure that all the poor people are fed? No, it is not done. It is not done like that, because you will disturb the evolutionary trail. People often ask, even in our ashram, sometimes people ask, dining room food, so, there are beggars, and mother has written, this food is not meant for beggars. You can connect it to these stories. So why it is not meant for beggars? Because it is the result of tapasya. It is because of their tapasya, the mother and Sri Aurobindo, the prasad is received. Now to receive even the prasad, there has to be a certain adhikar. You give it to somebody who is not ready. And mother has so many times said, don't give the food which is given in the dining room to workers and anybody and everybody. This is called misconceived philanthropy. So that's what we see in Vasishtha story, where again Vishwamitra says, I have a kingdom, I have many people to feed, give me this power. He says, no, she will be in the ashram. How many people would be eating food in the ashram? Not so many. And logically, Vishwamitra has a whole kingdom, so nice, roti, kapda, makan, all the problem will be sorted out. No. So this is the purpose of Kamadhenu, because she is a cow of the gods. It's where people are leading a godly life. And that's why whenever an ashram goes through difficulties, financial or otherwise, so somewhere we have to understand that our life has to change. Because when you lead a godly life, godlike life, then there is plenty. Even in an individual's life, Kamadhenu's blessings means you will never suffer from that kind of poverty. There will be plenty. In one way or the other, it will come. It will be provided. By plenty is not meant that you will have Sone Ki Lanka, but it will be provided for you. So this is how the rishis were managing their place. And he says, no. So when he says no, he says, oh, you dare to tell me no. What does he do? He beheads Rishi Jamtagni. He has now gone into his arrogant phase. And now Renuka Devi is weeping. And just then comes who? Enter Parshuram. So, he has 21 wounds on his body, her husband, so his father. So she says 21 times she utters the name of this man who has done this brutal thing. Now he has gone to the height of ego. So not only Parshuram kills him, it's not avenging. This is how it is described, that he avenges his father. No, it was his mission, that there were beings who were so dangerous to earth. So he kills him. But because, as this is a legend, that because she uttered 21 times, again and again, Parshuram, 21 times, make sure that this earth is free of all kshatriyas. Because it takes it that kshatriyas are the, because rajas, extreme rajas. See, a tamasic man is tamasic man. His capacity to do good is very limited and his capacity to evil is also very limited. But the rajasic man, which is the kshatriya type, his capacity to do good also increases and his capacity to do evil also increases. So he makes sure, because in the beginning this is what the kshatriyas were, and they would become arrogant. The moment they would become arrogant, Parshuram will make sure that they are wiped out. So 21 times he wiped out until, and that's where the story joins with Shri Ram, until he meets Lord Ram. And he is like waiting. Any kshatriya who is arrogant is finished. So, in his presence, all the kshatriyas would remain subdued. Because they knew, Parshuram ji aajayenge. When Parshuram ji aajayenge, they can't stand. He is very described in great detail, his exploits, but we will not go into it. So, the moment there was an arrogant kshatriya, here was a man with Brahma tej. And nobody could stand before him, and they would. So he is looking out for arrogant kshatriyas. And that is the time he heard that there is a kshatriya who has broken the celestial bow, pinak bow of who else but Shiva, his aradhya. There are other stories of Parshuram also, where he is the one who breaks the tooth of Ganeshi, because he wants to meet him. And he stopped. So with his farsa, he breaks his tooth. That's why you'll see Ekadanta. That's how he's described as Ekadanta. He is like that. Don't mess with me. Don't stop my way. And he is himself, none else but Lord Vishnu's incarnation. So then, if you read that narration, it's a very beautiful narration. First time you see in Rama, Lord Rama, the combination of extreme kshatriya manhood, but also a completely sattvic intelligence. So that's a samvad which I think if somebody has not read, one has missed something. So Parshuram is all angry because the breaking of the Shiva's dhanush pinak is now known to everyone. And he comes to see what has happened, who has done it. And when he comes to see, he sees these two Rajkumar. He says, oh, you people have again become so arrogant. I am going to take you. And now Lakshman ji is there. Now he meets his match. It's very interesting. I cannot resist the temptation of saying, please read it. So Lakshman starts, there is a verbal duel. And Rama is standing quietly, just smiling. He tells, I am sorry, this I didn't want to break it, this happened accidentally, this was not my intent. But then as he is mellowing down, Lakshman says, you dare to, you know, tell anything to my brother. My brother will say sorry, no way, he is right, basically, he has not done anything intentionally, how can you blame him? So there is a duel which goes on until there comes a moment when Parshuram says, enough of enough. Rama, you are very nice. You are very quiet. I appreciate you. But your brother is, he doesn't understand basic courtesies. He doesn't know who he is standing in front of. And now I am not going to leave either of you. Sorry, but both of you are gone. And that's when Rama intervenes. And Rama says, please don't do this mistake. It's a very powerful thing. He says, you verbal duel is fine. Don't challenge us to war. First time you see, Rama comes back, comes out with his kshatriyahood. He says, don't challenge us to war, because even if God of death challenges us to war, he won't stand a chance. And then he is shocked. Who is he? Who can say like this? And then he realizes he is none else but Lord Vishnu. And he realizes that now his time has come. He goes to, I think, Mahendragiri. Maybe I am mistaken about that. I'll do tapasya. And he throws away his farsa. And where he threw away his farsa, it is in, as the story goes, in the land of Kerala. You see how India is interconnected with stories. Kanyakumari, Tamil Nadu, extreme. Parshuram's Farsa in Kerala. And both of them connected to Shiva, Mount Kailash. So that's how the India was connected. And one of the ways to divide it was to destroy this fabric where everything is connected through divine stories, divine beings, and they are very powerful, beautiful stories. Why I say beautiful? Ki, you know, when you look at these stories, who were these men who once governed Aryavart? They were strong, they were powerful and wonderful creatures. Anything which was in extreme. So all that was once revered in this land. So this is the story of Parshuram. But now, Lord Rama's birth. This, we have just touched upon it. So Rama's lineage is very amazing. And Kalidas has celebrated it in one of his poems. All his poems are wonderful. Raghuvansh Charit. The lineage of Raghu. So Raghu is, they are all Suryavanshis, you know, descendants of the sun. And Raghu is the great grandfather of Lord Ram. And they are all known by one thing, which is celebrated in poetry as Raghukul Reet Sada Chaliai Pran Jai Parvachan Najai. Who were these beings? Who, if they gave their word, for them, dying was acceptable. But not breaking the promise. This is India. I mean, one feels so happy. I mean, I feel so happy and proud to belong to a civilization where way back, when even before there was a sea of civilization anywhere upon earth, there were beings like that. And Raghu, it seems, very fascinating story of King Raghu. He is the one king who conquers all the worlds, and it is described wherever there was land. Waters are already there. Wherever there was land all over the earth, King Raghu conquers. That's how the story goes. Now, what does he do after the conquest? Well, Alexander also was a world conqueror. We keep reading, no? Alexander, world conqueror. He came till Indus Valley and went away. But we have stories of world conquerors. What did they do? So he comes back and then he engages in Ashwamedh Yagya. And he says, distribute all my wealth to everyone. Look at the difference between the superheroes of Indian thought. He gives away everything. And when he gives away everything, now comes the time of another, you know, always there are celestial beings who want to test. So one of them comes, assuming the form of a, you know, a person who doesn't have money. He says, I am hungry and I need food. So he gives away his food also. He says, but I need something to sustain. He says, I don't have a penny because I have given everything. Everything that he conquered, he gives away everything. So he says, but I cannot let you go away. So what does he do? He still has the power. See, look at the beauty. You may have nothing, not a penny. But you have always the power of tapasya. Because he is a great tapasvi, he is a great warrior. So he says, that I have. I can get money for you. So whom does he ask for money? Straight away to Kuber. He said, look here. Give money, else I am coming. So Kuber said, no, no. Please don't do that. You know, story of Dhuman Bhai. He once had vision of Kuber. And Kuber says, because he used to worry about money for the ashram. He was one of the trustees and then suddenly he had vision of Lord Kuber. It's described in, it was published once in Mother India. And Kuber came, he said, see, she is the divine mother. Whatever wealth is required is there for her. You don't worry about it. Then he stopped worrying. Because he said, it's there for her. It's already kept. But we have to deserve it. That's the rule of Kamadhenu, you should remember, applies. So, well, Kuber gives whatever wealth is there, he gives away to this man. He doesn't keep anything for himself. And then he goes himself away and engages into tapasya for completely getting liberated. And several kings, you will see that they would conquer the earth. Whatever they conquered, they would distribute to everyone. And then themselves, they would go away from the kingdom, putting their child in place, and they would go and engage in tapasya and merge with the Lord. It's so inspiring. Shurabindo has partly translated, so I have the temptation to read it because he has translated some of the works of Kalidas, and I do believe, very partially, but I do believe he has translated some passages from Valmiki Ramayana also. Maybe we'll read it next time. But basically, I am convinced that somewhere something of his was definitely in Kalidas. He has appreciated him also so much. So Raghuvansh, which is the lineage of Raghu, that's what the poem is. And Shobindu, only little bit he has translated, very little. But look how he's describing the line of Raghu. Who were the Raghuvanshis? We hear about them. Raghukul Reet, Raghuvanshis. How Shobindu describes. Of course, it is translated from Kalidas. But see what was the humility of the poet. Kalidas says, such a great poet, I don't know whether I can really describe this lineage or not, but I'll try. So whom is he invoking? To the two whose beings are involved together. He is invoking Lord Shiva and Parvati. Like word with sense, for the boon of needed word and sense, the two have to go together like their beings. So see, the creative word and the divine being. So word and sense. How beautifully he puts the two together. To the parents of the world I bow, the God above all gods, Mahadev, that's how he describes, the goddess mountain born, Parvati. So that's how he invokes them. And then he says, of little substance is my genius. He is actually a genius. Kalidas, I am just resisting the temptation to speak about Kalidas. He is really, if you read his writings and how he chose even his successor. So, of little substance is my genius. Mighty is the race that sprang from the sun. Suryavanshis. We all are Suryavanshi in the highest sense, we all. Because this is the land, Aryavart, where, you know, we owe our ultimate parentage. Yet would I fondly launch in my poor raft over the impassable sea. See, what did Sri Aurobindo write about Savitri before he started writing? He says, I have launched my boat on infinite waters. Something along these lines. When he started Savitri. Does it remind us of Kalidas? He says, my poor raft. Of course, he doesn't use the word poor. He knows who he is. So he says, I am launching my poor raft over the impassable sea. Dull of wit, yet seeking the poet's crown of glory, I shall win for my meed mockery alone, like a dwarf in his greed, lifting up arms for the high fruit that is a giant's prize. So he says that, look here, I am not capable basically of doing this. Doing what? To describe the lineage of Raghu. Just imagine what it would have meant. And yet, I have an access into that mighty race. Even through the door of song, the ancient bards have made such access as has the thread into some gem that the point of adamant has thrid. Gem, you can't, it's actually, I also wondered how they pierce the gem and pass. This has been my, I've asked some of these some gem people, how do you do it? It's not easy, you know. If it's a hard gem, it'll burst. How do they do it? So he says, I am so humble, yet I have this access to pass through the gem. Look at the similes. Therefore, though slender my wealth of words, yet shall I speak of the Raghu's royal line. To that rashness by their high virtues urged that have come to my ear. He says, I have rashly heard here and there a little bit. I'll speak. Now see, what he's describing about the kings, the lineage of Raghu. We hear about Raghukul Reet, Raghuvansh, Lord Rama's, though he is Ikshvaku clan and his original king, but people know him as Raghukul. Raghukul Reet. So who were these lineage of Raghu? They who were perfect from their birth, whose effort ceased only with success. Lords of earth to the ocean's edge, whose chariot's path aspired into the sky. They were not happy conquering the earth alone, they would conquer heaven. What does it mean? It means those things, those powers which only the gods can carry. Like Kamadhenu we spoke about. There are many powers which are, several times we'll hear about defeating Indra. So we fancy on the chariot he is mounting and having a fight. What it means is chariot is the body. While you are in the body, yet you are able to master the lord of the mind. Because Indriya is the senses and mind is the master sense. If you conquer the senses and the mind, you are Indrajit. That's what Meghnad had done. That's what these were the people for whom conquering mind was like, okay, wonderful. That's an achievement. And they had done this. So that when they conquered Indra, then they had access to many of the powers, which in yoga one gets very naturally. And that's what it means, conquering Indra. But obviously if you have to show it on visuals, you will show it all, whatever, chariots going there, having a fight. Indra is a being. But these were beings who had conquered. That's why you'll see Indra in the Puranas is never a perfect being. So mind is like that. You know, it is often driven by senses. So Indra is not the perfect being in the Puranas. In the Vedas, we will see Indra as Sahasraksh, which is being of, who controls this entire, the mind that controls. But here he is only mind which controls the senses. They of faultless sacrifices. Why faultless? Because sacrifice done with the idea of getting something, that's not sacrifice. So Ashwamedh Yagya done by Raghu, he distributes everything to others. He wants nothing. He's just doing it because he has to do it. This one of his duties, Kartavyam Karma. They of the suppliants honored to the limit of desire. When somebody asked, they said, ask. And we'll fulfill it to the limits of desire. But equally, punishing like the offense and to the moment vigilant, very alert, vigilant, conscious, it means, only to give the gathered wealth. This one line like bowls me completely. What a selfish world we live in when we look at it. They gathered wealth. Why? To give. What a wonderful thing. This is original Vedantic communism. Gathering wealth but only to give. Only for truth they ruled their speech. They had mastered their speech, and when they said something it came out true because they had mastered it. Only for glory they went forth to the fight. This glory is not about winning or losing. See the beauty. Only for winning they went to fight. No, glory. Glory in the victory. Glory in defeat. They would not do something which will hurt the glory. So only for glory they went forth to the fight. Only for offspring they lit the household fire. What is this household fire? See that fire which is there inside the householder. This is the house. They would not have physical relation just for joy, but only to have the offspring. Embracers in childhood of knowledge, Gurukul. Seekers in youth after joy. They were not sannyasis running away from joy. Followers in old age of the anchorite's path. All of them, if you read through the lineage, when age came, they left the entire kingdom, everything, and went as an anchorite. This is an ideal even today. It's so, I mean, today to forget, I mean, any age. They, in death, through God union, their bodies left. How they died? They left their body consciously and united with God. These are our ancestors. Not I am son of so and so and this that. And then he says, let only good minds listen to my song, for by the clear intellect alone is the good severed from the bad. Your mind is not discerning, you will make fun of the story. That's exactly what happens today. Oh, how can it be? It's not possible. Maybe not possible for you, doesn't mean not possible for anyone. You'll often hear, arre, these are very high ideals. I have heard this sometimes, you know, during these are very high ideals. So I said, for you. Then the person becomes quiet. I said, only yes, for you, they may be very high ideals. But there are some who worship these ideals, who live for these ideals. At least I belong to that lineage. I say. Or by the clear intellect alone is the good severed from the bad. It's in the fire we discern of gold that it is pure or that it is soiled. So he says that only when gold is tested in fire you will know whether it's pure or soiled. He's describing the lineage of Raghu. What kind of people? You make them go through the test of fire, they will come out pure gold. Then he says, praise to Uma Maheshwar. For mastery of word and sense, I bow to the pair, close wedded as word to sense. Again, he is bringing back. The parents of the world, the mountain's child and the mighty lord. Wide is the gulf between the race born of the sun, Suryavanshis, and a mind thus scantily stored. Why I'm reading this and I remind, people are so casual, loose. Even here once somebody was saying casually about Lord Rama. I said, you know, become even the dust of his feet, then we'll speak. Because you don't know anything about anything. I can't even speak about what Rama is. So, I mean, even as a human being, forget about divinity. I am one that in his infatuation... Now he says, I am on a boat. Look at the poetry. I am on a boat and the sea is there. I don't know how I'll cross. So how he will cross? He says, I am one that in his infatuation would cross in a raft the difficult ocean. One may find this just an image. This is not an image. This is a truth. This is a vision of Sahana Devi. A dream vision. So she saw that she is suddenly in a sea and all wild beasts are there, beasts of all kinds. And she is praying, oh Lord, where am I? And then all these beasts somehow come near her, touch her and pass away. And then she sees suddenly that in front there is Aurobindo and the mother. And then they say, you come. And no beast is able to harm her and she goes there. This was exactly a very similar vision which Chotnarayanji also had. And he told me. And he saw Aurobindo and the mother and suddenly caught in the ocean. Ocean is Bhavsagar, this world. And suddenly everybody is saying, Jarasandhaya, Jarasandhaya. I'm not going into explaining what that meant. And then Jarasandh is, you know, basically you mix. Anyways, so he sees and he... he suddenly sees in front mother and Aurobindo. And while everybody is running away, he is just drawn and he goes there. So these are not just poetic words. Anybody who has taken up yoga will understand. I would say anybody who is into yoga will alone understand. If one wants to understand with the intellect, Kalidas is saying, my intellect cannot. And so he is saying, in his infatuation, just love of the Lord, cross in a raft the difficult ocean. Dull of wit, yet aspiring to poetic glory, I shall expose myself to mockery like a dwarf who in his greed lifts up his arms to a fruit meant only for the giant's grasp. What does Tulsidas say? Jaki kripa lavaleshate matimand tulsidasahu payo param vishram ram saman prabhu nahi kahu. He says, you think I have written? No, I can't write. It is only by the grace of Lord Rama who that a dim wit, a dull person like me, there is a similarity in story of Tulsidas and Kalidas in certain ways. We have spoken about it earlier. He can be lifted. Yet into the story of this race, he's saying, I am not just speaking about King Raghu. A door of speech has been made by the inspired minds of old. Look at how he's describing the process of inspiration. And through that, I can enter as a thread can pass through a gem which the diamond's point has bored. Therefore, this tale of the Raghus, the kings pure, from their birth, they took, left not work, till work's fruit appeared. They who were masters of earth to the oceans bound and their chariot journeyed even to the heavens. So that's how he continues, very beautiful. I'm just resisting the whole thing. But Shubhinder just written 2 pages. You know, sometimes you wish. It's like you feel, oh Lord, what are we missing? So this is about Raghu. So Raghu's son is Aj. Now look at, they were not just warrior kings. This, we are not talking of Lord Rama's story, we'll do it next time. Just the lineage of Ram from Raghukul. We have spoken about Sagar, Bhagirath, all that we have spoken. Now his son is Aj. So Aj is also a mighty king. All of them are mighty. He falls in love with an Apsara who has been cursed to come on earth. And she has got a human body, and she is told that she is Indumati, if I am not mistaken, and she is Harina in heaven, and she comes in a human body. But she is told, she says, "When will my curse be lifted?" This is very, very touching and interesting story. She says, "When a flower from heaven will fall on you." Now, King Aj is fascinated by her, and naturally she is celestial nymph, and they marry together and they have a 8-month-old child. And when they have an 8-month-old child, one day Naradji is going in his veena in the celestial worlds, and from his veena a flower breaks and falls upon Indumati. She vanishes. Now Aj is overtaken. It's described as a classical case of depression if you read through. They were strong in love and they were mighty in war. So he goes through such sadness. So everybody tries so much, but there also is a touch of love. He cannot imagine anyone else. He's a king, and not a king, an emperor of Suryavanshi. He ultimately leaves his body in a state of sadness, but in a state of intense love. And what happens to this 8-month-old? He grows up, and he grows up into King Dashrath. So Dashrath is, his name was something else, but he was called Dashrath because he's turned his horses in all the 10 directions. Now what it really means is, now we have things like Dashavadhanam and all that. Somebody who could simultaneously concentrate his energies, multiple concentrations simultaneously, that gave him something exceptional ability. So he could tackle. Horse is always force, vital energy, and Rath is the body. So he could he was so alert and vigilant. All around he could simultaneously concentrate. You can't, you see sometimes in some of these nice Tamil movies, the hero can see behind, he can see left, he can see right. it. So I said, this is Dasharath in a replica, and he can shoot arrows at will. All that capacity is there. So he also participates in the Devasur Sangram. So again, what is this Devasur Sangram? In Devasur Sangram is going on earth. So chariot is the body, the senses are the horses. You have to have perfect mastery to participate in the Devasur Sangram. And whom will Indra choose? He will choose who are actually mastered the Indriya. Otherwise you cannot fight with alongside Indra. And the fight is taking place on earth. There are enough demons. Actually maximum is here only. So he fights the demons within Swarat, as Sri Aurobindo says. Then he fights the demons outside Samrat. So in that fight, when they win, so then of course it helps the celestial beings. Because what are these celestial beings trying to do? They are trying to do God's work. How? They are building hope, giving faith, pouring love, high kind of love, knowledge. So this is the work that these gods are doing, inspiring us. Sri Aurobindo has described that in Savitri. We have, I think, not read. We will be reading that. No, we have read that passage. Or I have written that passage and sent in Morning Songs of the Soul, where these gods and goddesses residing in the soul say, step forth. And they are saying that we bring the fire to men, we bring them love, hope. So this is the work of these celestial beings. So what is the work of the asuras? Just the opposite. So they throw doubt, they throw confusion, they create all kinds of mischief that human beings will stop even believing that there is anything higher. So they rob faith, they take away aspiration. There are days when we feel, oh, I don't have aspiration, I feel very dull. It's all because of these asuras. So this Devasur Sangram in a miniature way is taking place. Now what happens to somebody who has become a warrior in the Devasur Sangram? You will have movies nowadays, they are, some English movies are like that, no? That I have forgotten the name, where people join and he is given a special sword. Lord of the Rings, and there are others also. But basically what it means is that somebody was sufficiently mastered himself to become an instrument of the divine in our context. Because we are not instrument of gods, but basically we begin to do God-like work. So wherever there is evil, we sow the seed of goodness. Both as an example, as well as through words, speech, conduct. Wherever there is loss of faith, we ignite faith. Wherever there is, you know, a person is feeling full of doubt, there you bring forth light. Wherever a person is surrounded by darkness. This is the original understanding of psychiatrist. Okay, divine psychiatrist. It's not like giving medicine. So because you bring light, you bring, not like, okay, you have developed this illness and just apply some medicine. Okay, that's okay. All doctors are instruments of the divine in that sense. As long as they are not running after money or, I mean, mother has said they are soldiers of truth. They should be at least. That's different, that when you run after money, then you are a Kalnemi. Kalnemi is asura who has worn the form of a god. So we are not talking of that. So this is what it means. Devasur Sangram, it goes on all the time. And all the gods are 24/7 busy. And when one becomes, so this is what it means. Dashrath is one of them. And if a king becomes an instrument of the divine, or the gods, it's wonderful. That's why it's so important. Even now, when you see that there are heads of the state, they are the most difficult because asuras possess them. And if a head of state, any country, he is open to the workings of the divine, it becomes very, very, very powerful. He may have his defects, that's irrelevant. I mean, King Dashrath had his own issues. He had 360 wives, for that matter. And he had three main wives. That is really irrelevant. But he's an instrument of the divine. So he conquers. And when he conquers, he gets his own boons. He has great capacity. So what happens? What do the gods do when you conquer? They increase their capacity. The law, the principle is, if you use any faculty, be it mind, intelligence, heart, emotions, life energy, even the body, as an instrument of the divine, it will increase. Gods are full of plenitude. That's what is meant by glory. If you use it for the side of the asuras, asuras will divide, cut, reduce, till you are left a heap of dust, ashes. This is the whole principle of Devasur Sangram, stories which we find all through the Puranas. This is taking place in an individual, this is taking place in collectivity, this is taking place everywhere. And there are very few who are instruments of the gods and the divine. This was asked to Sri Aurobindo. And he says, yes, there are very few, but one such instrument is capable of tackling, undoing a lot of darkness which is thrown. Because it's like one candle light is enough to spread, you know, light up a whole field. Of course, they will face the attacks more and more, because the moment you become an instrument of the god, the sangram starts, the fight starts. So that's a different story. So such is Dashrath. What happens to such a king? Again, he is also has, in love he goes to extreme. They were the kings. So in his, you know, people who say, India, India, me kya kastam, women live. Once in Australia, one lady, okay, whatever be the background, she was fighting for women's rights and she was talking about Hindu women. I said, excuse me, I mean, I understand, but she came from a Jewish-Muslim background. I said, I understand, you first, no. So I said, do you have any idea about Hindu culture? So then I told her that in Hindu culture, there were some 30-35% women who have written the Vedas. Forget about entering temple. Then I said, they fought wars. She said, what? I said, give the example of Kaikeyi. Kaikeyi is one of the three main wives of Dashrath, and one of them is Kaikeyi. So Kaikeyi is the charioteer. She is actually driving the chariot while King Dashrath is fighting. But the story doesn't end there. What kind of women these were? That in the battle, suddenly one of the, and he can fight all around, sides. He needs an expert charioteer. And she takes him. Now what does it mean? It means that she is taking care. I mean, the bodily chariot, every which way. She knows what he's doing. She's not an ordinary woman. And she was the most loved lady. Now, subsequently what happened, we'll come to that. So, in one of the battles, as the story goes, that one of the chariot's wheel, something comes out, but she covers it up and makes sure with a finger and makes sure that he continues the fight. She doesn't burden him. She actually helps him, even in a moment of crisis. And then when she takes out the finger, then she is hurt, she is injured. So King Dashrath tells her, ask me any boon that you want. And she says, I don't need anything now. She is full of that battle and the joy. I'll ask whenever. She knows that he has promised. So he belongs to the lineage of Raghu. Raghu kul reet sada chali jai, pran jai par vachan. He says, I know, don't worry. If I need, she doesn't need to endorse it. There is no legal document. What a wonderful thing. To stand by the word without any legal document. He is a king. He could easily have said, I'm sorry, you know, it was my emotional impulse, nothing. And then, as the story goes, he has everything in life except a child. So they engage in, again, yajna, and a being appears, Putra Kamishti Yajna. It's one of the yajnas which was done in the Vedas, one of the Vedic rituals, where you, if you desire a child, so he does Putra Kamishti Yajna, and the Yajna Purush, who is none else but Lord Vishnu himself, but taking the form of a Yajna Purush. So the form is described. He comes with a pot of kheer. What is kheer? Payasam. What is it called in English? I don't know. Anyways, milk rice. Okay. Okay, milk rice. Milk with rice. Anyway. So he gives it to King Dashrath, give it to your four wives, three wives. Now it's very interesting. How do you divide it in three wives? This is not there in the book, but in the story. But this is the problem before him. How does he divide? So he says, anyways, my eldest wife, Kaushalya, she is really wonderful. She is the most. So he gives half to her. He devises his own method. Half he gives to her. Now other half is left. He puts 1/4. So 1/4 he gives to his second wife. And now he thinks, what do I do with the 1/4? She wants to give it to Kaikeyi, but Kaikeyi is the third. So we have Kaushalya Mata, Sumitra Mata and Kaikeyi Mata. So he divides that 1/4 again into two. So 1/4 he gives to the third wife, which is Kaikeyi, and 1/4 he further transfers to Sumitra. So after 9 months, they have children. What is this piesome giving child? Well, it doesn't matter whether there was a sexual process or not. That's not relevant at all. Very often people say, okay, no, you have to get the point. The point is, it's a conscious parenting. Now we are talking about it. That there is a yajna in which Lord Vishnu himself comes and puts, and they take it as a prasad, sacrifice. So even putra kamishti yajna, meaning even when you are engaging in sexual intercourse, to be more precise, it is yet a sacrifice to the gods. You are invoking the divine being. That's what it means. It's not about giving payasam and they have a child. There are some stupid, silly people who keeps thinking everything, you know, because their scientific mind cannot come out of the physical boundaries. That's what it means. That, you know, they had. Now, they are not going to describe in gory details that, well, then they had a sexual intercourse. That's not necessary. It's understood. But it was a yajna. Putra kamishti yajna. So, mother speaks about conscious parenting. That you have a child, but you are not doing it as a just a sexual enjoyment. It's being done very consciously. Obviously, the physical process is involved. But in that physical process, there is a conscious aspiration for which they have prepared themselves. So, the first wife, Kaushalya, who got half the share, she has who else but Lord Rama. Lord Rama is Lord Vishnu himself. But he will not come alone. All of them are saying, we will also come. So through Sumitra Mata, there are these, because she has been given half, and then she has been given 1/4, then 1/4 of 1/4. So she gives birth to Lakshman and Shatrughan. Who is Lakshman? Because now Lord Vishnu has to come. So Lord Vishnu himself is Lord Rama, and Lakshman is Sheshnag. That's why he's always quick to anger. he is caring. He cannot leave him. Like Seshnagi is covering Lord Vishnu. He makes sure that, well, I will be like a shadow to him. No way, I'm not going to leave him ever. It's a beautiful story of love. Not just filial love. It's filial love, of course. And then, of course, who is Shatrughan? Shatrughan is the discus, chakra. It destroys. Shatrughna. It destroys all that is dark, all that is inimical to the divine. He is born as Shatrughan. And who is Bharat? He is the conch shell. So, all Lord Vishnu comes with his Seshnag, Shankh, and his chakra. So, that's how he comes. And meanwhile, Mata Sita is born. To King Janak. We'll talk about that in the next one. Actually, I didn't know how it will go because I was hesitating whether to take up Ramayana or not, honestly. In Bhagavad Puran, it is narrated only in one canto, where you have all the major things. But I don't know, I just couldn't resist the temptation. It is there. So there will be stories which will come from. But all this is described in Bhagavad Puran about giving the kheer, and all this is described there. Most of the major incidents are described. So we'll just touch upon that in the next session. Simultaneously, because we are talking about the symbols and the deeper meaning, we don't have to separately say. Wherever it's relevant, we'll do so separately. Jema.